Gotcha.
Brandela.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Please join me in saying the Anna Bekoach. Anna Bekoach. Shula Shemita. Ati. Ter. Alpha Gimel Yutak Sadi. Abel Rina. Sarenu. Sarenu. No. Ra. Kufre Shayan. Simtet Nun. Nagibor.
Nagibor.
Please use the sequence Yudkaf Shin to take any body part that isn't working properly. Take it back to its stem cell state and repair it, rejuvenate it, cleanse it, and bring it back to your body fully capable of working in its pristine state and doing its job that it is supposed to be doing, just as it has done in the past and will do again. Kvarchem tacharem rakame sidkata dami tetetresh tzadita timo asin kadosh beru tzuka Shavatenu kabel,
shavatenu
kabelenu, yodea kalumo, shinkufav, dadiyuta. At the eighth verse, we say in a whisper. I'm reading from the Zohar. From the Parsha of Pinchas, from section 87, Moses, the two messiahs, the rainbow and Malchut. Verse 588. Eretz Dikuchabarihu Ahidiki Vaharet Hagom Raglai Masid Radhesed Eat Kariat Maim Umisid Radhigura Eat Kariat Esh Umisid Radhiamuda The Emsaita of Avir, the Ihi Eret Sarka, the Kulhu. The faithful shepherd said to Rabbi Shimon, old man, the Shekhinah is called the earth of the Holy One, blessed be He, as it is said, and the earth is my footstool. From the point of view of Chesed, the Shekhinah is called water. And from the point of view of Giborah, she is called fire. While from the point of view of the central column, which is Tiferet, it is called air. But in herself, the Shekhinah is called earth, round for all of them. Namely, she accepts all of them. This verse is teaching many different things. One thing it's teaching is the concept of relativity, that you have to understand the perception of what is being viewed as well as the viewer in order to really understand the descriptions. And this is especially true when we're talking about Sephiroth or the tree of life. The Shekhinah, what is the Shekhinah? The academics describe it as the female aspect of God, but that meaning doesn't truly do it justice. The Shekhinah is Hashem, and yet Hashem never changes. Hashem never becomes harmed. The Shekhinah does. When we do a negative action, it is said that Hashem becomes less. When we do a positive action, it is said that Hashem becomes more. But it's not talking about Hashem, even though that's the term that is used. It's talking about the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is an essence, a metaphor, that is equivalent to the Satan. The Shekhinah and Satan are equal. That's what gives us free choice, free will. When we see the Shekhinah and we see the Satan, we see them as equal. They're not equal, because Hashem is much more powerful than Satan. But the Shekhinah acts as if it is equal to Satan. And this is what this verse is starting and hinting at and describing. Does anybody have any questions?
That's the first time I've ever heard that.
What you've probably heard is about the female aspect of God, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Never on the same metaphorical level as Satan.
But it's, and I don't mean it to be the idea that it's Satan, because it's not. But how can God, how can Hashem be in the dust? And that yet that is a verse that describes it. And that, you know, Hashem will go and lift the Shekhinah out of the dust. But what really is happening is our positive actions will lift the Shekhinah out of the dust. But this is all metaphors for us to understand, because the people who are describing these terms, the academic people, they don't experience the Sefirot. And if you don't experience the Sefirot, does the Torah never use the term Shekhinah? Not anywhere in the Tanakh is it used.
Mm-hmm.
The first time it's used is in the Talmud.
Would it be on the same level as separating the, you know, the Yod-Heh from the Vav-Heh? Is it kind of on that same level? And
yes.
I don't know if that's a way to word it.
Well, that is a way to word it. That is a way to experience it. That is a way to understand it. What brings the Vav-Heh back into connection to the Yud-Heh?
The positive actions.
Our positive action. But how can it be that God
can't separate himself?
You know,
okay.
it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And yet it does.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this idea that the Shekhinah can be damaged. And we know that God can't be damaged, so the Shekhinah can't be damaged. But it pretends to be damaged. When the exile takes place, we all, you know, all of the commentaries talk about the exile as this very negative thing. We didn't do our job. We let the temple be destroyed. We caused the temple to be destroyed through hatred for no reason. All of these verbs and all of these terminology is describing something that was part of the plan of the creation. There's this metaphor that the Kabbalists use, talking about the breaking of the vessels and sparks that fall into the klipot. And good deeds elevate those sparks. But where do those sparks fall? Where did they fall? Where are they? They're all throughout the world. Well, how are they going to be elevated if the Jews remain in Eretz Yisrael and there's sparks that are not in Eretz Yisrael? Were those sparks going to be elevated by the other nations? You know, people don't think through what they write. And I'm not criticizing the Kabbalists. I'm criticizing the academics, because they use terms that just don't fit together when you think about what they're really saying. When you start looking for the cause of things and you find them describing effects that just don't make any sense. Are there any other questions? Tonight's class is our 16th class in the Advanced Reincarnation series. And if you go to the Revealed Wisdom section of the Hashem's website and scroll to the matrix at the bottom of that page and go to the 9th row from the second column of the left. You have the Advanced Reincarnation series. And the first item you see on that page is Class 13. We're in class 16, and eventually I will have the time to put all of the classes in place. But if you go to class 16 and click on the handout for class 16, it's actually taking you to the same page as last week, except that it's bringing you to section 3, chapter 5, section 3, whereas last week we started at chapter 5, section 1. Section 3 is titled Ibur and Growth. Now, this translation is starting to come from Yitzhak Bar Chaim rather than the Shabtai Teicher. This is an indication that about this place, Shabtai Teicher was becoming ill. And so his commentary is still continuing. But the translation is being done by another gentleman. And there is some criticism of this gentleman's translation. I don't know the gentleman, and I'm not an expert in translation. So, but one of the comments that I make on this page is a question of the translation, because the commentary, the way it was written, it really is confusing, and we'll discuss it when we get there. Iburim has similar limitations as the Gilgul. Gilgul means reincarnation, where a soul comes into a body at birth. Iburim is referring to a soul that comes into the body sometime after birth. In the previous section, we learned that the group of nefeshot, nefeshes, the plural, from the same root, they come together into one body.
Are you still there? Did we get disconnected?
Might have. I don't hear him anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, give him a few minutes. He'll come back on.
Okay.
Sorry for the disconnection. I'm not sure what happened, but I hope you're still there.
Right. We're here.
Okay, so I will continue to read. But there is a quantitative limitation to this possibility. More than four nefeshot may not reincarnate together. Of the four, three are reincarnations, and one is a new nefesh. Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
We're there.
I thought I was hearing some static, so I apologize. So there's this limitation of four nefeshot. Three of them are reincarnations, and one of them will be a new nefesh. The same quantitative limitation applies to Iburs as well. What is not clear is, can there be four Gilgul and four Nefeshot, four Iburs, or is it a total of four, whether it's an Ibur and or a Gilgul? That's not clear in this translation and in the commentary. Up to three Nefeshot can come to help a person's Nefesh. The total will then be four. More is not possible, but less is. I'm really having an interesting time today. My computer just went dark. There it's back. However, those who had come in the secret of Gilgul only came to help themselves, to rectify their sins, or to fulfill a mitzvah they had yet to perform. One of the understandings, one of the teachings, is that every soul must, at one reincarnation or another, must do every mitzvah perfectly. Kavanah, internal, external, every aspect of the mitzvah must be done by every soul. And this is one of the teachings, so that if a particular soul has come, corrected all aspects of the actions, but has not completed a mitzvah properly, that it must reincarnate or become an Ibur to participate in doing that mitzvah in the proper way. However, those who had come in the secret of Gilgul only came to help themselves, to rectify their sins or to fulfill a mitzvah they had yet to perform. The soul of a tzaddik may come for its own benefit, or only for the benefit of the host. The last section focused on the subject of multiple Gilgulim. Now we are beginning the discussion of Ibur. And the Rav is reminding us here of the contrast between a Gilgul and an Ibur. In Gilgul, the Nefeshot all come at the time of birth, and they all come to benefit themselves, to rectify some sin or perform some mitzvah. In contrast, in an Ibur, the soul of a tzaddik comes into the host at the age of 13 and one day or later. They may come for their own benefit, or they also may come for the benefit of the host. Expanding upon the discussion of Ibur, the following is an example. consider a person who has reincarnated into a body to rectify himself. He has 10 nefeshot in his root that are higher than himself. If he merits it, then the 10th, the lowest nefesh, which is still higher than he is, will enter him as an ibur and help him to achieve tikkun. If he increases his merit, then he will receive the 9th nefesh as an ibur. And if he merits more, then the 8th nefesh will enter. Thus, he will have received 3 nefeshot, and including his own, there will be 4 in total. More than this is not possible. However, if he further increases his merits, then he can receive the 7th nefesh as well, which will cause the 10th nefesh to surrender its light to the 3 higher Iburim. There can only be 4 nefeshot in the body at one time. 1 is the host, and 3 are Iburim, the plural form of the word Ibur. If the 4th nefesh above the host enters, then the lowest of those above the host must leave. This is the way it continues until he achieves the 3 highest nefeshot of the 10, the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. The light of these 3 will be revealed in this Ibur to assist him. The other 7 will lose their light to them. In contrast to the light of the 3 upper nefeshot, they will seem as if they no longer exist. This is because only 3 nefeshot, in addition to the nefesh of the person himself, are possible in 1 Gilgul. My commentary. I've given some of it already. Please note that we are discussing only one part of the body and one part of the soul. There are 613 parts of the soul. Also, please note the nefesh souls always remain unified, so the klipot do not get them. So it is difficult to understand what is being expressed here. Perhaps it will be discussed and clarified later in another chapter. In one paragraph above, it says the lower nefeshot will leave. Where does it go? In the next paragraph, it says that the nefeshot only loses its light. It does not have to leave, or maybe it does. The language is not clear. And the commentary by Shabtai Teicher is leaving holes in our understanding. The next section, section 4, is titled 2 Sets of 3 Plus 1. If the nefesh is not rectified in the first 3 Gilgulim, then there will be another set of 3 Gilgulim together with the Ibur of a Tzaddik. The verse says, all these things God does 2 or 3 times with a man. This is a verse from Job. It's talking about reincarnation. Of course, we don't see it that way when we read Job. This verse was already mentioned in section 2 in connection with another. Visits the sins of the fathers on the children for 3 and 4 generations. We learn that a maximum of 4 nefeshot can come into a single body at one time, whether in Gilgul or in Ibur. One is the main or host nefesh, and the other 3 are Gilgulim or Iburim. The verse, all these things God does 2 or 3 times with a man, was also mentioned there, seemingly as a secondary source to the rule of quantitative limitation. Now the Rav will give it a new interpretation. these two verses, one in Job and one within the Esther Dibrot, is talking about reincarnation. When we read the Tanakh, we don't read it with that understanding because most people read it literally. But when you recognize the meaning of it, what does it mean that there's three or four? God doesn't do things exactly. Sometimes it's three and sometimes it's four. It doesn't make sense. It has to be looking at something else. And the same thing applies to two or three. God doesn't do something twice and another times three times. What are his rules? What is his natural laws that are being used in this way? It's the same idea that Moses said to Pharaoh that around midnight, the destroyer will come through the land. And the commentaries all ask, what, God can't tell time? What does it mean around midnight? He came at midnight, exactly at midnight. And the answer that the commentaries give is that Moses was concerned that the Egyptians would miscalculate midnight. And therefore they would say God had told them a misstatement. So he modified the statement from exactly at midnight to around midnight. That is what many commentators explain about these two verses. But the Ari is making it very clear. These two verses are talking about different aspects of reincarnation. And they're very clear. What two and three means, what three and four means, is very clear, as we will come to understand. It must come back, but not alone, since it lacks the ability to become rectified on its own. In the first three Gilgulim, the nefesh of a person reincarnates by itself, without any partnership in the body. However, if after these three times his nefesh is still not rectified, it must come back up to an additional three times, but not alone, because it lacks the ability to become rectified on its own. It comes for three Gilgulim. If it can't achieve its correction in three tries, well, the idea of three strikes, you're out. If it didn't achieve its correction in three strikes, it has to come back to achieve its correction up to three more times. But since it has already shown that it can't do the job by itself, it receives help of an Ibur. And it cannot come back without the Ibur. It cannot come back on its own. My commentary. Please note that the correct translation of the Rav would be, it will come back up to an additional three times with help. Doesn't mean it will come back three times. It may only come back once with help. And if it achieves its correction, that is sufficient. It doesn't have to come back the additional two times. The first three Gilgulim have proven, so to speak, that it cannot make it on its own. Therefore, it returns together with a man. This is a righteous Sadiq who will come as an Ibur to help him and direct him in the right direction. The man that is mentioned in the verse refers to the soul of a Sadiq who comes as an Ibur to assist the host and direct him in the right path. Therefore, the verse does not say three times, which would seemingly refer to the first three times, but rather two or three times. The Hebrew phrase that he's translated two or three times is pa'amayim shalosh. A literal, accurate meaning of these words is twice three. Why doesn't it get translated that?
Are we out again?
I think so.
Well, he'll come back.
Okay.
Most of the time, if it's us that's out, we have to redial. But if it's him, he usually comes back.
Okay.
It's me again. I guess I got disconnected again. I'm watching it closely to make sure that I call you right back.
Okay.
Okay.
Was there any questions?
Well, I'm thinking it. You know, how does a person is a person aware that these souls are within themselves? That's probably a logical thinking question, but...
No, it's a valid question. It makes perfect sense. And the answer is, on some level, yes. On the conscious level, who are you? You are a sum total of all of the parts of your soul. But I have explained to you that every night when you go to sleep, the sum total of your soul parts goes up to heaven and is rejuvenated. And sometimes if you achieve the correction for one of those soul parts, that soul part is replaced by another soul part. And the soul part that achieved its correction remains in heaven in the next morning, and it's replaced with another soul part that comes with all of the other parts. What this is saying is, you are a different person every day, potentially. What this is saying is you're aware of these four components, but you're maybe not on the conscious level. There was a movie around the early 90s that literally described the story of, I don't remember the actors, but it was like a bus accident where these four people were killed in the bus accident. And they missed their bus to heaven. So they found a little boy, a little baby, and they waited around for him. And they each had something to do, which is why they missed their bus. They had some action of correction to do. And the little boy, as he grew to manhood and in his 20s, lent his body to each of those four souls to achieve their correction. One of them was a thief, had to go and replace what he had stolen. And I'm just going by memory. I don't really remember it clearly. I don't remember the title of the movie. But it was very clearly following what I had learned at that time, was what the Ari said about the four souls maximum that inhabit the body at the same time.
I saw that movie. It was good. I still like it today.
I agree with you. It was good. And it was a lot of the Hollywood industry has been churning out Kabbalistic movies for the last 20 years, primarily because a lot of the members of the Hollywood Insider Group, the writers and the directors, have been studying Kabbalah with the Kabbalah Center. And, you know, because they're not well-known and publicized, you know, it's not a major issue and people don't really realize it. But when you see some of the movies that have come out in the last 20 years, they're extremely Kabbalistic. Let me continue. The first three Gilgulim have proven, so to speak, that he cannot make it on his own. Therefore, it returns together with a man. This is a righteous Sadiq who will come as an Ibur to help him and direct him to in the right direction. The man that is mentioned in the verse refers to the soul of a Sadiq who comes as an Ibur to assist the host and direct him in the right path. Therefore, the verse does not say three times, which would seemingly refer to the first three times, but rather two or three times. And the Hebrew phrase is pa'amim shalosh, which literally translates as twice three. This teaches that during a second set of three Gilgulim, he will have a man as a partner with him, or a woman. Since he did not succeed in the first set of three Gilgulim, he gets a second set of three. In this second set, however, he also gets an Ibur, the soul of a Sadiq, to help him. Chapter 5, Section 5, titled Connected Levels of Soul. A fascinating concept is explained in the Saba of Mishpatim regarding the body of someone who has reincarnated many times. In what body does the soul arise in the time of the resurrection? The secret of servitude is a related article from the translations by KabbalahOnline.com's writings drawn from the Zohar. This article pasted below will help with our understanding of this section. And I will read this article, but I think that'll be about how much time we have. So I'm not sure we're going to finish section 5, but we'll have to wait and see. From the teachings of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the translation and commentary is by a different teacher. His name is Moshe Miller. The rationale behind reincarnation or transmigration is dealt with in the Zohar in a long passage called Saba de Mishpatim, a portion of which has been translated below. The central idea is that reincarnation or Gilgul has two purposes, to rectify sin and to acquire higher levels of soul. The former types of souls are the old souls referred to above, while the latter are new souls, which do not require rectification as such. The following section is based on the verse, if you buy a Jewish slave, he shall work for 6 years, and in the seventh year he shall go free without liability. And that's a famous phrase that a lot of comments are made that, you know, how does that apply to my life today? I don't own a slave, and I certainly don't own a Jewish slave. But it's really talking about reincarnation, and that's what the Zohar does explain. A Jewish person can become a slave in one of two ways. Due to extreme poverty, he sells himself. In this case, the slave's master is obligated to treat him as a hired laborer rather than as a slave per se, providing for his needs and those of his entire family. This is not the type of slave discussed below. He is sold, the second type, is he is sold by the court after conviction as a thief if he does not have the means to repay what he stole. This is the type of slave discussed in this section. Well, let me read you my commentary, and then I may have even some additional commentary. These terms, old and new souls, are used by people with a totally different definition than these terms that are being used in the writings of the Zohar and in the writings of the Ari. A new soul is a soul that has just split into one of six people due to the inability to achieve his tikkun. His tikkun is easier than it was last lifetime, as the more complete old soul, as an old soul is a soul that has blemishes, that has blemished his tikkun and taken it to a deeper level of impurity. In modern language, an old soul is someone who is more righteous and wiser in the ways of the world. Do you see how strong and powerful is Satan? Yet you are more powerful. You can defeat him, since he just hides behind this veil of the illusion. Once you see it, you can start to clarify what is the real truth of a situation. It starts with asking the question, what is the cause and what is the effect in this situation? The soul must be reincarnated either because of sin or because it failed to completely fulfill its obligation in Torah and mitzvot. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai began his discourse reciting the verse. These are the ordinances that you shall place before them. The Targum, which is the translation of the Torah into Aramaic, translates this verse as these are the judgments that you shall arrange before them. This refers to the coordination of Gilgulim, reincarnations. The judgment of souls that must be reincarnated and returned to this world to receive the punishments to which they have been condemned. If you buy a Jewish slave, he shall work for 6 years, and in the seventh year he shall go free without liability. Rabbi Shimon said to his circle of disciples, now is the time to reveal a number of closely guarded secrets concerning Gilgul. If you buy a Jewish slave, he shall work for 6 years. This applies when the soul must be reincarnated, either because of sin or because it failed to completely fulfill its obligation in Torah and mitzvot, while alive in the previous incarnation. Now, if the person's soul is from the aspect of the angel Memtet, comprising six levels of Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod of the world of Briah, then the verse states, he shall work for 6 years. The soul is obligated to undergo Gilgul only until it completes the rectification of those six levels in regard to that aspect from where it was taken. The six Sefirot of Memtet just mentioned. However, if the soul is from the aspect of the Shekhinah, the Malchut of Atzilut, the seventh of the emotional Sefirot corresponding to Shabbat, the seventh day, what is written? In the seventh year he shall go free without liability. Because a righteous tzaddik who has merited a soul from Malchut of Atzilut does not have any work in the sense of rectification. Accordingly, the Gilgul for such a soul is not a rectification, nor is it a punishment of any sort, but for another purpose, for the sake of benefiting the world and providing leadership. Such a soul is comparable to the Sabbath, the seventh day, when all types of work are prohibited, Indeed, elsewhere, a tzaddik and a Torah scholar are called Shabbat. And since he has no obligation to work, he is not enslaved. Regarding such a soul, it states, in the seventh year he shall go free without liability. Without liability is without being enslaved. Just then an old man, the Saba, came down to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and said, "If this is so, Rabbi, what is unique about that soul, regarding which it states, the seventh day is Sabbath to the Lord your God, and you shall not do any work, you and your son and your daughter, your slave, your maidservant, your animal? Since even your slave and your maidservant, souls from the world of Bria and Yetzirah, and your animals, souls from the world of Asiyah, are prohibited from doing any work on the Sabbath, just like you, your son, and your daughter, souls from Atzilut. What differences is there between them?" He, Rabbi Shimon, replies, "Saba, Saba, this is..."
He's been disconnecting tonight. We just wait. He'll come back.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara. I was just going to say, I just got on the call and,
He's following the same outline as last week.
Okay.
I'm back again.
Yes.
Did I miss some questions or just commentary while you were waiting for me?
We are waiting.
Okay.
I just tried to tell her where we were. She wasn't sure where we were. She just came in, so that's all we said.
I understand. Okay. He, Rabbi Shimon, replied, "Saba, Saba, this you are asking, this entire verse is certainly said regarding the soul of a righteous tzaddik, which is from Atzilut, although it is obligated to descend and be reincarnated in all three of these levels, even as a slave and a maidservant and an animals, which are the Elfanim, or in any beast into which human souls transmigrate. Nevertheless, the verse, 'You shall not do any work,' is written in regard to it. When the soul of a tzaddik from the world of Atzilut is obligated to descend into this world and be reincarnated even into beasts of the forest, it nevertheless does not have to do any work of rectification. This is the meaning of 'You shall not work him like a slave.' In regard to a tzaddik who is the Sabbath day, you shall not work him like a slave who is the weekday. Please note, the Elfanim is a race of angels. The Zohar verses is explaining that tzaddikim can be reincarnated into the race of angels in Olam Yetzirah. This is probably a new idea to most of you. Why would this happen? Because this is the work of the garden that souls are given to do. This may be the other five levels, the five sets of 7,000 years of tikkun that the Ari speaks of will not be necessary. The Sabbath is the soulmate of the tzaddik. But Saba, Saba, the Sabbath, which is an only daughter, is Malchut of Atzilut, called Bat. His daughter is the soulmate of the Tzaddik, who is also called the Sabbath, as explained above. But since this is so, since she is his soulmate, why is it written in regard to him? And if he shall take another in addition to her? If he has found his soulmate, why would he need an additional mate? He said, this is without a doubt the difference. And if he shall take another refers to the weekday aspect of the Sabbath. The meaning of this phrase will be explained shortly. For there are ordinary weekdays that are not called the weekday aspect of the Sabbath, but rather a spiritually impure slave girl, a shivcha. My commentary. Of course, you do not understand this teaching since the vocabulary is from the language of branches. Let us see if it clarifies. The old man asked, what is the weekday aspect of the Sabbath? Rabbi Shimon replied, this is the Yama, a maidservant, Bina of Malchut, of the world of Briah, who is the body for the only daughter. The only daughter, Malchut of the world of Atzilut, is clothed with an anima, like the soul is clothed in the body. Regarding her, it is said, and if he shall take another in addition to her. The explanation for this is as follows. Come look, there are souls called Ama, and there are souls called Shivcha, and there are souls called the daughter of the king. Each is named according to the source where it is drawn, or to where it transmigrates. And in the verse there is also a man, if a man will sell his daughter as a maidservant, regarding whom it is said the Lord is a man of war, referring to Zeronpin of Atzilut. And there is also another man regarding whom it is said, and the man Gabriel, referring to the archangel deriving from Geburah of Briah. This part of the verse is therefore interpreted as, if a man, the Holy One, blessed be he, will sell his daughter, a soul from Atzilut, which is called an only daughter, as a maidservant, the soul transmigrates to that level of Briah called Ama. That is, the Jewish people will not leave the exile in the manner of slaves, hastily and in flight. Therefore, a soul that must be reincarnated, if she is a daughter of the Holy One, blessed be he, if the soul derives from Malchut of Atzilut, do not say that she may be sold into the body of a Gentile. Heaven forbid. For that is where the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination from Samakel, rules. As it is written, I am God. This, the Tetragrammaton, is my name. I will not give my glory to another, i.e. to the Yetzer Hara. Thus, if the soul is from Atzilut, even though it transmigrates to the world of Briah, it is not obligated to do the work of rectification, nor is it subject to the Klipot. Now, regarding the body in which the daughter of the king, the soul from Atzilut, resides, he did not say that she can be sold to the lower crowns of impurity. May heaven have mercy upon us. In this regard, the verse states the land, the Malchut, shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine. Now, what is the body of the king's daughter? This is the angel Nemtet, who is the Ama, the maidservant of the Shekhinah, since the Shekhinah is clothed within him. Thus, the body becomes an Ama, a maidservant for the king's daughter, who is held captive therein, and it nevertheless transmigrates in Gilgul. What is written in this regard? If a man sells his daughter as an Ama, a maidservant, she shall not go free like the going free of a slave. Furthermore, another interpretation of the verse, if a man sells, refers to the Holy One, blessed be he. His daughter refers to the Jewish people, who are the aspect of an only daughter, Malchut, which is called daughter. Now, if you will say that they will go free in the future with the advent of the Mashiach, like those enslaved in Egypt, who are from the aspect of a slave, Memtet, and fled from Egypt, the verse states, you shall not depart in haste, nor in flight. That is, the Jewish people will not leave the exile in the manner of slaves, hastily and in flight, in fear of their former slave masters, because they will not be from the aspect of slaves, but rather, like the only daughter of the Holy One, blessed be He. Thus, when a person is worthy of the souls from the aspect of the only daughter, it is said regarding this soul, she shall not go free like the going free of a slave. That is the end of the section from the Zohar that's being translated. There's a lot of confusion, I am sure. We're out of time for tonight. I think it's best if you kind of reread this section, that you come back next week with questions about what's really being said. We will pick up where we left off, the line that says, let me find the line. Now we are continuing with section 5. This is where will be where we will start. Does anybody have any questions right now? I realize that it's rather confusing. But if you want to ask a clear question now, go ahead. If you want to think about it for the week, we'll start out next week with those questions.
I have one question.
Go ahead. Mine can wait.
Go ahead, Natanya.
One question that I had was, as you say, in an individual may have situations where they may be aware that I'll rephrase. Can other people have glimpses of the fact that a person is in this life with in a third, fourth reincarnation, and following that reincarnation in a negative way? Is that a possibility?
Everything about a reincarnation is known. It's revealed on your foreheads. It's revealed on your palms. It's revealed on the skin of your body.
So
to someone who's knowledgeable about what is being seen.
Okay. Thank you.
Everything is known.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Bacha, what was your question?
Well, today I was speaking to a friend. She called me and she asked me a few things, and she made the comment that actually I've been talking to her since probably 2004, that someone came up to her quite a while back, years ago, and told her that this was her 47th reincarnation, and that this time she needed to get it right. That would not be so, according to tonight's lesson, right? That it's possible to have two sets of threes. I didn't answer her. I just let her talk. But
the answer to your question is, you're confusing different aspects. If you go back to the different phrases, I don't remember exactly where, but I believe it's in the book of Exodus in the Esther Divrot, where it talks about that No, it's not there. But it speaks about Hashem. I don't want to use the word hates because many times it's translated as hate. Hashem dislikes those who like him, but to those who love him, he will show his affection thousands of times. I'm paraphrasing. But in essence, if someone incarnates, if that soul makes a correction, but it's not a complete correction, that soul will reincarnate a second time. And as long as that soul is continuing to make correction, but not completing their correction, they will reincarnate thousands of times. So 47 is very, very possible. Although I would doubt that someone who walks up to someone to give them that information, I have heard of it, I know of it, but it's for people who need that information in order to achieve their correction. That's the only reason they would be given this information. For someone to be given this information and then attribute it to just that's interesting kind of information, the universe is efficient. It doesn't need to satisfy human curiosity and human game playing. The universe is efficient. If someone needs to know that this is their last incarnation, that they will achieve.
Oh, wow. That question was very connective. I'll come back. Baruch Hashem.
Is he coming back?
I think he may not, though, since we were at the end.
Oh, he's got to.
We'll wait a little. Yeah, here he is.
I'm back. Yeah,
we got you.
What I was saying is that the universe is efficient. That for someone to be given the information, this is your 47th reincarnation. What purpose does that serve? Now, sometime in that person's life, 30 years from now, they might be able to use that information as it relates to their tikkun, in which case the information is meaningful and the universe will provide it. But for the most part, most of the people who are doing that kind of thing are not following, not being channels from the positive side of the universe. They're giving people information to intrigue them, to satisfy some curiosity, to draw them away into a longer process. The universe is very efficient. What information do you need to have in order to achieve your tikkun? The fact that that this is your 47th incarnation for most people is not going to be significant in how they achieve their correction. For most people, it's curiosity that is being fed. And that curiosity, as we know, kills the cat. Curiosity tends to draw people away from a balanced perspective. That's not to say there's anything wrong with curiosity. curiosity is a very valid motivational aspect of humanity.
Well, I didn't want to pursue too much because I was concerned that it would turn into Lashon Hara. So I told her something that you had said. It came to my mind, and that was that in this generation, most people are Jewish, and we're in various points of rectification, whether they would convert in this reincarnation or need another time. And she seemed to agree with that because of she was one of the leaders in the Messianic movement here. She's no longer that, but she, anyway, so that was my reason of, that's how I got out of that one.
I understand, but I hope I've answered your question.
Yes.
About what
yes.
was what is being said in this section of the three incarnations and then three more with a helper with a man, you know, or a woman in the case of a female. It's talking about the souls that come into a reincarnation and do not achieve any correction in three lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and we all know people like this. We don't like to judge them. We don't like to say it. You know, I'm thinking one of my daughters, when she went to college, was involved with a really nice young man. But you know, she broke up with him. And I asked her why she broke up with him. And her answer was, he just wasn't aggressive enough. He had no ambition. Now, she was relating it to earning a living. She was relating it to what he wanted to do with his life. But it's really, she was really addressing the issue for herself of, I don't want the couch potato. I don't want that lifestyle. And so she made that choice for herself, and she's very happily married, thank God. This is the, you know, we all go through these kinds of experiences, and many of us have had lives where we didn't achieve any correction. Many of those lives, we put additional negative veils on ourselves because we became connected to the pleasures of the physicality. Are there any other questions?
Are you available after the call?
Need about 15 minutes, and then yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I hope you all will have an easy fast tomorrow, or had an easy fast today, because I'm confused about the dates. And
we caught it last night, though.
Okay, good. Have a good week, and we will speak next week. Think about, reread these sections to see if you can begin to get some sense of what is really being described here. Speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.